Someone who probably should have known better once said that a novel is nothing but a well-told lie. Is it? You're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. In the fall semester, our Wyoming Catholic College seniors write theses, and then in the spring semester, all classes are canceled for 3 days as they present their research in the form of public orations. 30 minutes of lecture, followed by 30 minutes of questions from a faculty panel, as well as from their peers in the audience. This and the next edition of the After Dinner Scholar will feature interviews with seniors about their topics. Mary Woods, this week's guest, is an aspiring novelist. Rather than believing nonsense about well-told lies, she entitled her thesis and oration, Law, the Soil of Story, Christian Fiction, and the Rules of Subcreation. Christian and Catholic authors, she concluded, being aware that their work is participation in divine creativity, should produce better fiction than non-believers. To understand why, I asked her first to explain what she means by subcreation.
So basically what I mean by that is the human creative process is an imitation of God's creativity. So because we're rational, like God is, we can use our minds to put some sort of form on the material world. And we can't do that in it as complete or as free a manner as God can, because God can create both the matter and the form of an object. We're very limited in that matter. We can't create matter. We can't even destroy it. But we can put it together in new forms that didn't actually exist before. So that, even that ability is an incredible privilege that God has given us. So that's why it's sub-creation. It's not full creation, but it's under the same, it's the same type of power that God has.
Mm-hmm. And you got that term from Tolkien, is that right?
Yeah.
And he created whole new worlds.
Right. He invented that term. I think one of the first places that it comes up is his wonderful essay on fairy stories. Yeah, and of course he took it very much to heart. He created his worlds, not even at first so much with readers in mind, I think, but just for the joy of sort of putting a world together. And he was just fascinated and, you know, kept putting in more and more detail, kind of almost for its own sake, just to be creating something beautiful with integrity. So, yeah.
Now, you talked in your oration and your thesis about creating beauty. I want to unpack that a bit. What do you mean by beauty? And particularly, I think you'd say both Tolkien and Flannery O'Connor are great fiction writers and have great beauty. Mm-hmm. But it's rather different.
Right. Yes. So the definition of beauty that I was working with in my thesis was basically the scholastic definition of beauty. So Aquinas, he describes beauty as that which gives pleasure on sight, but that means something very specific. It doesn't mean just an emotional pleasure, but an intellectual one. And then working with that definition, reading through the works of Jacques Maritain and his philosophy of art, it leaves room for sort of these infinite variety of manifestations of beauty. And it's not always something that is sort of pleasant, like on an emotional or immediate level, but it's a deeper intellectual perception. So essentially the three essential aspects of beauty that the Scholastics and Aquinas talk about, and then Maritain takes up, are integrity, proportion, and radiance. And so if a work of art has these three things, if a work of fiction has these three things, it will be beautiful, but that can look really different for different works. As you mentioned, Tolkien and O'Connor are extremely mm-hmm. different in the way that they write fiction.
Well, tell us about those, beginning with integrity. What is integrity in literature?
So integrity, it means the completeness of a work. So essentially, does the story have all its parts? Does it have a beginning, a middle, and an end? And even more importantly, do those parts fit together in a rational way. So do the causes in the story lead to the effects in a plausible manner? So that's a very brief definition of integrity, but it manifests itself in a lot of surprising ways too when you're actually getting into the details.
What? Give us some examples.
So, like on the level of the plot, as I mentioned, you want to make sure that all the events are connected together and that the reader can see that. But then you can have integrity sort of on a level of these really small details, like if you mention that a character's eyes are one color at the beginning of a story and you mention it again later, it had better be the same. Even just like sort of on a consistency level like that. Yeah, just that things fit together and have a certain unity to them.
So. In other words, the world works the way the world works.
Right, yeah.
And if it's Tolkien's world, the world works a little bit differently than the world we live in.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting part of integrity, is that it's the integrity that creates the believability of a fictional world. And obviously there's cases like, you know, the genre of fantasy, where the worlds look really different from the real world that we perceive. But those worlds can still be believable as fiction, as long as the author has a set of rules that are consistent for the world. And then they don't even necessarily need to be fully explained. Like in fairy tales, there's usually some sort of magic in the fairy tale, and it's never explained how it works or where it comes from. It's just sort of a given. But the fact that it works, and that, you know, if you take this enchanted object from, you know, the wizard's house, it's going to have this consequence. And that's the rule in the story. And as long as the author follows that rule, it's going to be believable on a certain level.
Mm-hmm. It's going to have integrity.
Yeah.
Now, what about proportion?
So proportion is the relation of the parts of the work to one another. And again, this happens on every level of the work. So you want to make sure that the beginning, the middle, and the end are sort of proportionate to each other. You don't want to have a really long beginning, like before you get to the action, because the story should follow the action. But then you can also have proportion on the level of the sentence or the paragraph. So in terms of prose style, the great authors will have a really polished prose style as well, and it'll be balanced and concrete. And authors that aren't as good at this will sort of ramble on, and they won't have a balanced prose style. They won't have proportion in their sentences. So they might have a really good story, and it might be really well connected together on the level of the plot, but on the level of the prose, it's not as beautiful because it's not proportionate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had an example of a very good author who had a very, very long, 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 highly descriptive, very static beginning to a story.
Right.
And it was hard to read. It was, in fact, hard to read as I was going through it. Yeah. Yeah. And all right, so integrity, proportion. What about radiance?
So radiance is really interesting. Maritain says in his philosophy of art that radiance is the splendor of the form shining through the matter of the work of art. Now, what exactly this means in fiction could be several different things. One that I like to think about is sort of the clearness of the connections, the clearness of the actual events in the story is one method of radiance. So in this way, like, fairy tales or stories from the Bible are really, really radiant in this way, because they're sort of pared down to almost the bare minimum. It's kind of the purest form of narrative. You just have the events one after another. And there's not really a lot of description in terms of the physical vividness of the words. It's pretty simple. It's not very elaborate, but it has that radiance of the events. But then there's, you know, another way that you can show radiance by being really, really vividly descriptive. I think I gave the example in my oration. I read some excerpts from Flaubert, Madame Bovary, and he's amazing at this kind of prose style. which is extremely detailed with the physical descriptions of things and of people. And he brings you in with all your senses, you know, sight and smell and taste and hearing. And so he just presents the scene to you in this radiant manner. It's very concrete and clear to your senses. So that's another kind of radiance in fiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your oration, you stated that Christian or Catholic authors, quote, being aware that their work is a participation in divine creativity, the idea of subcreation, should produce better fiction than non-believers. And then immediately after that, you say, Christians seem particularly good at writing bad fiction. Now, I agree, but why is that?
Yeah, so it's a rather curious phenomenon, but it's almost everyone I talk to pretty much says the same thing, like, yeah, this is the case. And having talked to and been in writing groups with other Catholic and Christian writers, the sense that I get is that we have a very strong sense of sort of being on the defensive against the secular world and the fiction that's coming out of that. And just, I get very tired of trying to find trying to find things to read and people who want to hear stories that are good and true and beautiful and include Christianity, rather than attacking it or just leaving it to the sidelines. So I think a lot of Christian writers who want to write fiction, we feel kind of this obligation to make it explicitly Christian and to try to evangelize through the story, because it's a really, you know, it's an essential part of who we are. And we want to tell people that. And that impulse is not a bad thing. Where it becomes problematic is when you forget that fiction has its own principles, which if you don't follow the principles of beauty, you're not going to end up with a good work of fiction. It doesn't matter how good your intention was. And in fact, I think that a lot of these really well-intentioned authors, their intention actually backfires because what they're writing will not convince anyone outside Christianity. And it's not even really doing any good for fellow Christians, because it's not challenging them to look at reality. They're kind of writing stories that, where they're writing platitudes, or they're writing these stories which give a very easy moral solution, which is it's not even realistic. It doesn't actually have integrity, because it's not looking at reality. It's just kind of, it's looking at Christianity in the abstract, and we don't live in the abstract.
Now, briefly, what are your own aspirations as a writer?
I've been writing stories basically for as long as I can remember. My own aspirations eventually are to write and publish my own fiction. And I have a tendency towards some of the more fantastic genres, so fantasy and science fiction. I also love historical fiction. I love doing the research for that, sort of creating or recreating a world from the past. And I guess my hope would be that I let the ideas for stories come to me and inspire me without sort of going out of my way to look for, oh, I need to make this moral point. Rather, I want to find stories that inspire me, and then I know, just because of who I am, that there will be Christian principles in the stories. And yeah, and just honing my craft so those are present as an organic element in the story rather than an external principle from the outside that mars it. Yeah, so it's going to take a lot of work, years of work, but those are my hopes, yeah.
Novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky famously wrote, "Beauty will save the world." Beauty and the power of stories, beginning with the story of Jesus and the beautiful stories he told, can move us far more than well-crafted and beautiful arguments. One way to immerse yourself in the beauty and power of stories is to come to Lander, Wyoming, this June 9th to 14th, for the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, our annual adult gathering. Our topic is No Greater Gift, Friendship from the Iliad to Facebook. For more details about the school, visit our website, wyomingcatholic.edu. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tunkowicz.